Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Don. Suzette's going to be calling back in a minute.
Okay.
Hello, okay.
Jay. Hello, everyone.
So, thank you. What I'm going to do, Don, is I'm going to play a video about Home and Square because for some reason my computer froze when I got home from my other activity. So I'm going to play it now. There's not going to be any glitches. Here we go.
The whole secretive nature of Home and Square makes it one of the worst experiences I've ever had to deal with. I can only imagine what's going through the defendant's head when they're arrested and taken there. Many times when you go to Home and Square, you're told the people aren't there. Oh, no, we don't have anyone. And the person who's charged with the crime is sitting back there thinking, what the hell, where's my family? I know they got a lawyer for me, where's my lawyer? They don't realize that we're outside banging on the door trying to get in, but they're not letting us in.
Over 7,000 people were brought to Home and Square. Police allowed lawyers in about 1% of the time.
Home and Square is nothing but a gigantic converted warehouse with inconspicuous doors all over and no front place to even enter. There's no driveway. There's no parking lot. There's nothing. Operating a massive red brick warehouse between two of the most crime-filled areas in the city of Chicago
. Okay, there was another glitch, so I'm just going to drop that. So in the between August 2004 and June 2015, nearly 6,000 people were held at Home and Square, and they were held there to be interrogated privately without any proper police procedure. And 7,000 people were off the books. It's called off-the-books interrogation in this warehouse area, which was under the radar. There was nothing up front about it. The new disclosures reveal that there was an ongoing transparency lawsuit, which gave a full-scale portrait of how bad it was, a secretive facility that the Chicago police have described as a little more than low-level narcotics crime outpost where the mayor has said the police follow all the rules, but they didn't. The police portrayals contrast sharply with those of Home and Square detainees and their lawyers who insist that this could happen to someone, it could happen to anyone. A 30-year-old man named Jose, for example, was one of the few detainees with an attorney present when he surrendered to police. The officers at the warehouse questioned him even after his lawyer specifically told them he would not speak. The Fillmore and Holman boys, Joe said, referred to police in the facility's cross streets, don't play by the rules. According to an analysis of data disclosed to The Guardian in late September of that year, police allowed access to Home and Square for only 0.94% of the 7,185 arrests logged in over 11 years. The percentage aligns with Chicago's police broader practice of providing minimal access to attorneys during the crucial early interrogation stage. So this is kind of like a forerunner to all the protests that blew up years later, including in my own city, Minneapolis. And Don, you're on the line now, and in about 20 minutes, you're going to have to take the show over if there's more guest callers because I have to punch into work. So how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. I'm not really. Life is starting to hit me hard. It's kind of something that a lot of people go through. So I'm going through some stuff in life right now. But that's just life.
It's not a divorce, is it?
Not to that degree, no. But there might be, I might sell my house. And I've been in my house for 30 years. And
the house that you guys live in?
Right. There are various reasons, but
right now you have, you live there, Pat lives there, your daughter with her two kids live there, and so does the Shannon, right?
Right. So we all live here, and we're all in a situation that Kelly is buying a house. She just sold hers. One of the main reasons is that the economy. We have an opportunity to get a
make a lot of money
in equity. Yeah, correct. And if the market doesn't seem to be stopping, and the equity here in Nevada, especially in Reno, is one of the it's like the second highest value gain in the country. So this is, the opportunity to sell, our house for 30 years, for quite a bit of equity in it. And it's something that we're strongly thinking about. We have yet to list it.
Okay. I understand the situation where you want to make some money, but make sure you have an adequate place to go. And then I have to make a few, and before we get too far into that, I have to make an announcement. Suzette, it's 10:36 here, Minnesota time, and I have to punch in at 11. So after we talk about 15 minutes, you and Don can finish the show out whenever you want, but Wade is supposed to call in tonight, and so he should be calling, and maybe Albert. So
okay.
I'm going to pull you in, Suzette. Just give me a minute.
Okay.
So hi, Suzette.
Hello. Hi, Don. Hi, Jane.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever had problems with Spreaker, Suzette, but the most craziest thing happened tonight. Like, I got home at 9:50, which is 7:50 your time. I paid for BTR, and then they gave me a new call-in, a new guest call-in number, and then it didn't even apply to my account, but then somehow it got fixed by itself, and here we are a half hour later.
Oh, wow, that's nuts.
I know, and I literally had to squeeze this show in today because someone from one of my jobs got fired, so I've been working like an extra 2 hours a day, and then I went to my second job, and then I went to a meeting at church for an hour. I walk in the door, and all this stuff happened. So that was pretty bad.
Are you taking care of yourself?
I am taking care of myself, but we all have different schedules, and Suzette's in a class right now, and John has unavailability, so it's very helpful. Like
you.
When people like Wade call in too.
All right.
So here's the deal, you guys. Just a minute, Don. So the reason I picked the topic of Holman Square is because it was a detention center, a hidden warehouse that only the insiders knew about. Over 7,185 people traveled through there in 11 years for interrogations and arrests. The lawyer accessibility was 1%. And it's only a topic I chose because I came face-to-face with it this week with somebody that I actually helped service in the mental health community. And he was talking to me about the dilemma of, a lot of times, because I've lived in 7 cities and 3 major U.S. cities, like, a lot of people are really a byproduct of where they grew up. Like, if you grew up in the south side of Chicago, your chances of becoming a street person or a drug dealer are way higher than if you grew up in, like, St. Cloud, Minnesota. But there are drug dealers everywhere, just to be noted. But what I'm saying is this person has so many mental health problems from crime and influence that his life is completely affected by it. I can't name his name for personal reasons, but a lot of people are just a product of their environment, and he came to the point where he had to either become a snitch or join even a tougher gang and kill people. So he became a snitch, and now he's an outlaw, and he doesn't even live in Chicago anymore. But it's actually open topic tonight, and we don't always have to badger issues on police. But I was just wondering what was on your guys' minds tonight.
Well, I did have one question. Is that Holman Square right across, I think I might know where it's at. Is it right across or a couple, like a block away from the Cook County Jail? Do you know where those
I don't know the
was?
Answer to that, and my computer's been freezing all night, so I'll have to get back to you on that one.
Okay.
But my husband and I, when I was married, lived in Waukegan, and I really don't know Chicago that well. But I've been to the south side. I've lived on the north side, but I'm really not an expert on geography.
Okay. Anything
Suzette,
about that?
What's on your mind tonight?
Not a whole lot. I mean, there is a lot, but... It's kind of one of those things.
It doesn't have to be what we're talking about, because to tell you the truth, I think we've been a little too focused on police problems.
I'm just talking news in general. There's just, you know, you get overwhelmed with all the news going on and trying to keep up. Let's see, scientists. Well, they believe that there's these type of mushrooms that are on Mars, so that's like proof of life, which I thought was interesting.
So
I did hear about that. There's Science Friday on National Public Radio, and they were talking about that. That was a week ago already. I thought they found something else, too, like traces of some kind of liquid or something.
Yeah, some kind of,
did
I mean, it's like odd
that?
Things, like mushrooms, the liquid, and then that, the little drone crawly thing, because it got stuck. They had to maneuver it so it would flip over.
How did they get it out?
I don't know. They were able to you know, maneuver it to where it was a try, and I guess it finally got a grip to where it was able to flip back up and do its thing. And I was like, oh, I was thinking what you were thinking. How are they going to get that thing flipped around? Because there's only one there, and there isn't
it
anything else.
It sounds like they can fly to Mars and undo it.
Well, in this
so
case, it was just controlled.
Don, are you in an outer-worldly mood?
What do you mean? No, I mean, I don't mind talking about, you know, they found a black hole that was, only about 5 billion light years away, which is close, the closest, and they say it's relatively new, but it's supposed to be one of the closest that's to our solar system.
You mean like is it a danger to space travelers?
Not in this vicinity, but I'm sure somewhere else. They found it when they saw two apparently either burning out stars or something like that. It might have been ready to suck those in. So that's where how they found it. I didn't hear, Suzette, about the
mushrooms.
In
some ways, I feel like people are unrealistic because they found like one plant on there. These radio people were talking about eventually moving there. Like, it's not that simple.
Yes, it is.
You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. Right now, they are preparing the space
station.
No,
it's not, Don. It's not that simple.
It's very simple. They're prepping one of the space station that's there already, to handle. They're expanding it, and they just announced that about a month ago. They're making it bigger so that more people can get there, and then they're going to plan another space station at more or less in between there and Mars. So that'll be a jump-off point and a filling point for rockets going to Mars. And so that should cut the time, or at least the continuous voyage. They should be able to cut the ability for the human to age or something like that. It's something that goes hand in hand with long trips and spaceships. But anyway, that's their plan, and it's going to be here faster than we think, because 45 pretty much started private public enterprise with NASA again, and when NASA gets involved in something, it is possible. And even if the Hollywood has
it's possible on a small scale, but it's not possible on a grand scale. Now, I notice about people, can I just say something? And it was actually Suzette's topic, but I am having computer problems tonight, and the only thing that's working well is my phone. So I'm not going to look up any moon stuff. I'm just going to make probabilities. So there was a contest in Duluth, a writing contest to write about our COVID experience. And, mm-hmm. Back in the 1300s to 1500s, when people died of the Black Plague, they died within 2 days. And people are complaining about wearing masks and being inconvenienced in stores and restaurants. But we really don't have it that tough. But this week, I've had two friends this week have facial outbreaks, like rashes from masks, and they've had to order special products to keep their face safe. And then what I was thinking is that human nature in general is escapist, because even when we have things good, we're always looking to go somewhere else, and this is kind of what this Mars story reminds me of. Like, we're so desperate for hope that we're thinking we're going to move to the red planet in about 5 years. So, Suzette, do you have any more details on those plans? Because I can't look it up right now.
You're missing the point. You're missing the point. We will. That is our next journey. The moon and Mars are our destiny. We're going to be there one of these millennium. So you might as well.
No, we're not, because Jesus is coming back in 5 years. There's going to be a world war, and then you're either going to heaven or hell.
So all of us are going to be dead? I don't think so. That's why they're making it so fast.
Because actually after Armageddon, there's going to be a 1,000-year millennium of life on Earth, and Jesus is going to reign in Jerusalem.
Okay. And then she laughs.
He's going to settle that two-state thing once and for all.
Exactly.
You know what a Muslim told me once? When Jesus comes back to earth, he's going to come back and say that he wasn't the Messiah. It was a mistake. Yeah, right. Like, he's coming all the way back to earth to make sure he wasn't the proclaimed king. So, Suzette, can you tell us a little bit about that Women Who Are Patriots organization that you're in, or is it something you created?
That YouTube channel is something I created, but the classes that I'm attending for Convention of States is an organization. It started 7 years ago, and what it's about is Article 5 is a tool that our founders had given us to use in case we had a government that had gotten out of control, where most of the power is centralized instead of with the states. And so our founding fathers gave us a recourse. The only thing with that, though, is that because we are 50 states strong, you must have 34 states, no less, that agree on the amendments that you want to make to the Constitution in order to rein in the power from the federal government. And so in order to get 34 states, they have to pass legislation. And again, they have to agree on, you know, the amendments. So Convention of States has raised and proposed three. The first one, and there are no particular order, is fiscal responsibility as far as making an amendment to the Constitution that Congress, the House of Representatives that has the power of the purse, must, as far as the budget, they have so much money to budget with, and that will be determined at the time that they hold debate and, you know, finalize it. But and they have to be show that where that money goes. And such, you know, and the other one was term limits on Supreme Court justices and other justices, as well as congressional members, because the people that are there, they make a career out of it, and some of them even die while they're in Congress, you know, in a seat. Not necessarily there, but, you know, they're like 80 years old, and that's a problem. And the last thing was government overreach as far as their power within the states to control them. States that want to pass their marijuana laws or anything else, that's their sovereign. They're supposed to be able to. And the federal government needs to have their power limited. And so right now they have 28 states that have passed their state legislature, the resolution to join Convention of States. And so we are shy, just a few. But then after we get those 34 states, you take it to Congress. They have to review it, propose it, debate it, and then it goes from there. And then if they finalize it and agree to those amendments, passes the House and the Senate, now we have to get 38 states to ratify it. Otherwise, it's dead in the water. So, and then we start all over again.
You're talking about the Constitution part where it says if the government is no longer serving a functional purpose, that it can be dissolved by the general population and reestablished, you know, like for a better purpose? I'm paraphrasing.
That's an option, but the thing is, you know, the states that have joined in have agreed that we don't have to go that drastic, that they're, we can fix it by certain amendments, but to dissolve it would be too difficult to get everybody to agree to. Let alone 34 states. And so we have to take little bites.
I'm sorry. You're looking for the path of least resistance, but mainly it's reform, right? You guys are trying to reform things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, just making a quick announcement. I'm checking the BTR page to see if anyone else called in, but in about 5 to 7 minutes, you guys have to take over. And once my boss leaves work, then I can talk again. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Sounds
now, one of the things about a constitutional convention that you have to keep in mind is that the text that goes into it has to remain the same. And,
yes, that's right. They have to agree.
They agree on a preview of the text, and they agree that that is the only text that can be negotiated.
Pass a resolution. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then it passes a resolution, then they're going to. If they pass that, then it can pass. But the text can't be amended or changed in any way.
Exactly. It has to be word for word. And if there is one state that passes a resolution and the language is different, then it doesn't count.
Correct. And then the other thing is that deadline thing that I've been fighting against with the ERA, where there's generally going to be a deadline for those resolutions to be passed. And if those deadlines aren't met, then again, like you said, it'll die.
So we go for the 34, the minimum first, and then after, like you said, it goes to the House and the Senate, and they say, okay, go ahead,
go for it. See if you can get 38 states to agree. If you can get 38,
exactly,
then it's done. If not, well, see
exactly
you later.
Yeah, but, I mean, because they're worried, the Constitutional Convention, they're worried that it's going to be overtaken by a faction and pretty much cause maybe a civil war. So that's why they've been hesitant to bring up constitutional conventions.
Right. That's that whole runaway convention argument that
exactly
comes up. But
exactly
then when you think about, I mean, it's taken 7 years just to get 28 states together to get the same language and pass it through their state legislatures. It's like, that's a lot of work. I haven't been with them that long. I just joined last month as a volunteer. So I run the district for my District 52 here in California.
You're a volunteer for the organization that supports the state convention, or you're a volunteer
yes
for the state convention?
The organization that started the whole thing, basically, is putting it all together. If you are go to YouTube and you see Convention of States, Mark Meckler is a co-founder, and he's put everything together. It's pretty big, and they got it from the volunteers at the very bottom. We have social media people that that work just at social media, and we have people that train people down below us to recruit and to get signatures for the petition. And if you agree on those three things that I talked about, you can go to Convention of States and sign the petition. And that petition is in for your state. All you have to do is it will know because of your information that you put in there. So it will go to the regional manager of that state, and then it goes to your state legislature, because the more signatures we gather in favor, then we can take it to the state legislature and say, here we go, this many people in your state want this and they want to be a part of it, so here you go. And so you guys need to pass
it. And I have one last question before I go. I'm 4 minutes. I live less than 5 minutes from work. So after I ask this question, then you and Don are going to take over for 15 minutes. So you know how, like, Texas and Georgia and other states are trying to reform the voting laws? Do you think
mm-hmm
this organization you're involved with is kind of like an extension of, well, first of all, the Democrats are ruling the lower house right now. So do you think they're trying to put into place some measures before the Democrats radicalize things completely?
Well, as I mentioned, they've been working on this for 7 years now. This is the eighth year. So 7 years ago, Obama was president, and then Trump came in. So during Trump presidency, they were still working on it, because it's not a Democrat or Republican thing when you think about it. It's a nonpartisan, because who doesn't want to control our government? Because that government is supposed to be us. We the people. We decide where that money goes and how much goes, and not Congress, not the House of Representatives. They are our mouths. They're our voice. And, you know, when they decide they're going to get a raise when everybody else is hurting for money after this thing, and they don't have to show up for work, they can do it via video and then give themselves raises. There's a problem. You know, so the budget, the Supreme Court, you know, when they sit on that bench for so long, it doesn't matter if there's 10 or 12, 16 judges. There needs to be term limits, because they get out of touch. Some of them
yep
are senile. You know, it's just they need to turn those seats over, have them be elected or appointed or however they can be decided at the time of the convention. But, yeah, there needs to be term limits, absolutely. So,
I agree with the Supreme Court term limits.
And as far as the federal government,
when the federal government starts applying.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, because I have to punch in 2 minutes. I'm against
ahead,
the
Jenny.
Supreme Court change. Yeah, let me talk, damn it. I'm against the
ahead,
Supreme
Jane.
Court.
Go ahead, Jane.
Okay.
You said it 6 times, I know. Okay, I'm just kind of crabby right now.
I have a lot on my plate.
So I'm against the Supreme Court having more than 9 judges, and I'm also against not having – I also think that they should be there for life because they earned it, and it's kind of a lofty institution, and it's viewed differently than the rest. And, no, they can't change as fast as society, but – Now, like, you know, I was never really a fan of Clarence Thomas, but he does have a good legal mind. But why can't they stay there for life, you guys?
Because they get, she just mentioned it. Do you know how many the judges have gotten senile on the bench? We've had quite a few that haven't been talked about. They're there for life, and that means two, maybe even 3 generations of people, they lose touch. And when you lose touch, then you're clashing with history, and that can be ugly.
They seem to get a God complex where they believe that, they truly believe that they are ruling, which they are, over the land, which they are, but that's not their job. They're just there to interpret whether or not what is the case coming before them is constitutional or not constitutional. But when they've been there for so long, they think their opinion matters so much that that doesn't matter anymore. It's what I think that this law means. And so you can't be doing that. And that power only comes when you've been there for too long.
Okay.
Yeah, then.
I gotta go punch in now, but I'm just gonna say one thing. There was a senator from North Carolina, I think it was Jesse Helms, and he held the office till his death, and he was a racist, and there was nothing nobody could do about it because he kept getting voted in. So,
right.
And then there was Strom Thurmond, who was there forever. Orrin Hatch was there a long time. Even the Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, was there forever. So, but that is a political office, and you do have to get voted in. So it's not like they have 100% protection for their legacy. But either way, I'm signing off for 15 minutes, and I'll come back. You guys keep talking, and I'll keep looking to see if Wade or Albert calls.
All right, good riddance. I mean, have fun. I mean, have fun.
Have a good day.
Yeah.
So,
right.
I mean, look at how these Supreme Court justices are portrayed. Yes, they may have legal, you know, great legal minds and so forth, and they get their due credit and respect. They deserve that. But they still are men and women that put their pants on, you know, left or right foot first, you know, and their socks and shoes just like the rest of us. And so when we start separating them and putting them on a pedestal, and then they have that crown feeling as far as royalty, the elitists. That's a huge disconnect. We're no longer we the people.
Well, that's why you have 3 divisions of government. The branches are to counterbalance either of the 3 that goes awry. And the Supreme Court, fortunately or unfortunately, has only... Gosh, only probably 10 to 12 high water cases that really have affected the United States. Other than that, the Supreme Court has been relatively innocuous in forming our government, luckily, because they can effectively be the strongest of the branches. But we've effectively kept them in check, like we are so supposed to be. And our main, you know, right now in these modern times, our main thing things are abortion, gay rights. The government can't do much about the economy because that's the Department of Treasury. So
sure, but when they cross the line with that whole that immunity that they had given police officers without passing legislation, they just decided this is what we're going to do, and we're going to give them protection so they can't be sued for their wrongdoings, for misconduct or anything else. for me, that right there was they crossed the line. And when you do it once, you open it up to keep doing it.
Qualified immunity is the biggest, one of the biggest concepts that we are going to have to address. I'm addressing that right now here in the Nevada legislature. You know, I'm a citizen lobbyist, so it's our legislative time right now.
Mm-hmm.
And qualified immunity consent, complied consent, and no-knock warrants and general terms for police to stop at, pretty much, is...
The no-knock warrants, though, there was authorization through the right proper channels for that. Whether or not it's constitutional or not is what the Supreme Court needs to decide with that.
Exactly.
But what the Supreme Court did with that qualified immunity, thank you for giving me that name because I couldn't remember, so thank you. But with qualified immunity, that was a whole decision all on their own with no process, with no legitimate authority through the proper channels of Congress making law. They just decided. So that's a huge problem. Yes, we have other problems with the Justice Department, but those have to be handled through the proper procedures. But the Supreme Court justice, they need to have that some of that power that they think that they're willing around that is totally unconstitutional. They need to have that yanked back, and they need to be taken down a few notches because they're only a third branch, like you said.
What year are you talking about qualified immunity was ratified? Do you know what year was that? That was ratified. The Supreme Court has gone through, the Supreme Court has gone through many iterations. And so it's, it could have been one of the Supreme Courts that was in the 1850s, but it could have also been one of the Supreme Courts that was in the 1930s, 40s.
No, this was most recently.
But they said that police no longer have qualified immunity. I haven't heard of that.
They said that we no longer have it?
That they maintain qualified immunity. Okay.
Yes. It was something that was signed, I thought, under, I want to say Reagan, but I can't be for sure. I have to look that up, and I'm not near the computer right now, but.
Okay, that's all right. I just wanted to get a
general. Yeah, I guess it was under Reagan, and I was actually shocked because it was a Republican president that was signed.
Problems with the police, the peace officers, the system that you can actually kill and get away with.
Yes.
And in Chicago they hadn't had before. Oh God, I forgot the police officers. I think the guy that killed who was walking around. Anyway, he was one of the first police officers in Chicago in 35 years. To even be prosecuted, and that's disgusting because the police run around that place, and they're shooting people left and right.
Right. Well, the qualified immunity, what that did was basically prevent them from personally being sued. Now you could sue the city,
sue. You can sue the department, but you can't sue the individual officers.
Right.
And that doesn't make sense to me because officers, there are good officers and then there are some bad officers. And I'm a cop kid and I was around the good officers, but I heard stories and I knew that cops can be
that's what due process gives you an opportunity to basically try and, explain yourself. Was it an accident? Was it not an accident? Deliberate? And if they can prove it was deliberate, and basically a lot of these cases it's pretty clear, then that person needs to pay personally, not the city. Why should the city have to pay? It was that person.
Exactly. So, part of it is that they're going to have to start as the entity is going to have to start making a fund that's separate and distinct in their budget in order to not only increase personnel, but also to give a person who's a perpetrator, an officer or law enforcement who's actually a perpetrator, the ability to withdraw from that fund in legal, you know, matters. That might, I think that was also a little side discussion.
I agree. Yes.
So there are all kinds of things that we would be changed if we had our law and order agenda approved, the more progressive agenda, because that is mostly who is the back, you know, the backbone of the entire police reform movement. I do not want to defund the police by any means, and in fact, I would like to increase funding, but that would include counselors, people who can who are trained to de-escalate situations, things like that. That should have been, you know, my mom was a community police officer, so she had a territory, she had a beat, and that she went to door to door eventually to everyone's house to make sure that they knew who she was. And now the police are just vigilantes riding around in their cars, stopping everyone and thinking every situation is a danger to their lives. And all these officers who are a part of a shooting and have to give their testimony, 100% of them say that they're fearful of their lives. And I would fire them.
The community, and when they're a part of the community, then they don't have to fear for their lives, and the citizens of that community can feel safe when the officer is around because they know that they're on the same side. But when you lose your sense of community, if you don't even live in that same community, you know, that you're going to get what you got right now going on. People don't trust, you know, the lack of trust.
Well, the 21st century community policing task force that Obama approved is one of the models that I have been going by for years in terms of how police should act under the code, because they take a code too. They take a sworn, they're sworn officers. And so, you know, for the most part, we pay them, so we're paying them to kill us. Especially as minority or indigenous and people of color. So we're paying them to kill us. That is an oxymoron that I really can't accept.
Well, they're certainly not there to protect, even though their cars say to serve and protect, but they're there to serve and protect.
Wade is on the air now. Wade is on the air now, and I'm still in a meeting. So, Wade, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Wade.
Yep. Hi, guys. Yes,
hey,
good points. I've been listening for a while. Hey, so I don't have to cut into my, I'm like, yeah, good. I agree. I think I mostly agree with, I think, pretty most all of what's being said.
Yeah, well, that's we're true. Pretty much in agreement, so I'm glad. I'm glad he agrees. That's so nice.
It's a smooth
yeah.
night.
Yeah, it's not always the case with the show, but yeah, I guess it's a good sign when we agree on something. It's like, come on, politicians, you know, everybody's saying this.
Well,
yeah.
We have a Democrat, Republican, and Liberal agreeing on something, so that means that means that 45 is not in office anymore, because when he was there, nobody agreed on anything. And that is one of the big apparent things that I want, that I guess the Democrats want everybody to understand that I don't know about you, but I feel a lot more peaceful and relaxed and able to take care of my general business, as opposed to trying to figure out if we're going to be losing money for tariffs or, you know, who knows what. I mean, that was so much. I can't even give any specific thing, but I know that I feel a lot more relaxed now.
Well, that's a docile contentment that you get when you have a non-transparent administration. When you have a transparent administration, everything's out there, so it looks and appears chaotic because you're not used to dealing with things head on. Instead, it's everything's good, you guys are great, you know, life is going to be great for the future, don't worry about it, we got it handled. And in the meantime, they're, you know, doing the backroom deals and other things, and so everything seems fine on the surface, but that's what you get when they're non-transparent.
You know, I think, and I had another friend say, oh, it's so peaceful and quiet now that with the new administration, and the thing is, though, I think you're, the perspective a person listens to makes a huge difference, because really, I mean, honestly, Republicans tend to listen to Republican perspective news, and Democrats listen to the Democrat perspective news. We don't have much in the way of neutral news anymore. So, you know, the Republicans now, like in Fox News, you're hearing, oh, man, everything's going to hell in a handbasket. The people that are maybe listening to, I don't know, CNN, you know, they're pretty mellow, and not when Trump was in office, they were pushing a lot of, oh my gosh, you know, he's going to just look at what he did now. Can you believe it? So, yeah, I think perspective can make a big difference.
Well, all I know is I feel more peaceful now.
Where people are at, because you want to know, of course, if you're on one side, you want to know what the other side's saying, so this way you can balance things out. And if you hear something that you hadn't heard before, then you go check it out to make sure, you know, what's this about.
That's what should happen for sure. Hearing different perspectives, absolutely. Not what happens a lot of times in reality.
But January 6th was real. That was not fake, and that's what is distinct. That's one of the main things I'm talking about. You know, you got that gentleman who was still president, and he pretty much told a lie from the start. He said he was going to be with them, marching with them. He wasn't. He said that there wasn't going to be a breach, or that it was a small breach to the gate that turned out to, you know, kill 7 people. And so it's a pretty, you know, wild set of testimonies after January 6th that would contest.
There's
the
more.
Again,
there's an issue. There's a matter of perspective, right? Because, you know, the Democrat slanted news like CNN, they were totally dismissing the stuff that was going on over the summer, what was going on in, like, Portland, taking over government buildings, burning things down. There were people killed. And
you are kidding.
Then they,
you are kidding.
And then they
– that means, that news was – that was on every night.
Be careful with their thing.
That was,
well, you
that
had,
news
like,
was
Cuomo
on
– saying who said –
hey, forget Cuomo. Cuomo doesn't talk –
well, good.
He doesn't talk for me. He doesn't talk for a lot of Democrats. I mean, none of them do. They're just talking heads. Bottom line,
well, that's good to hear.
Nobody could get away from the fact that the cities were, I can't say burning, because when I was, you know, in the 60s and 70s, I know what burning cities are. This ain't shit.
Okay.
What these people are going through today is like little, you know, tap dance class. What we went through back in the 60s and 70s was real upheaval. But the bottom line is that All I'm saying is that that and what you're saying about the non coverage of news of the cities and riots, you know, they were riots all summer. They were being televised. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I wouldn't say that the amount of damage that was created during the summer or done to people was nothing, because there were people that lost their livelihoods in that.
Right, but nobody lost their lives, except for Rittenhouse.
Yes, they lost their lives. There were like
five murders.
Except for Rittenhouse and Kenosha. Nobody lost their life.
Was it Seattle or Seattle? That area that they had taken over.
Chalk. Right.
People that were killed that were actually in Chalk.
Right. They were in the city and they got killed.
Yeah, they were members of the Chalk and they were killing each other, shooting each other. So
right.
Things that happened with that, but when you have that, everything that happened over the summer compared to the one day, I mean, really?
Really?
I don't mean to put it that way, but we're still talking about it.
If I was, I can't say that because a black man, I would have been killed if I just killed a piece of grass. But in terms of the destruction. Now, you had as many people in the whole summer riots, more or less killed, than one day. And in terms of property, property is property. You've got businesses, houses, stores, whatever. But when you go to the capital of the United States of America, with Congress and Senate in session, that is far more deadly and onerous than
I'm not justifying it, but also on the same note, when you lock people, police officers, in a building and then try and set it on fire, I mean, come on.
I would still rather see that than somebody with a Trump flag or the American flag hitting a police officer. I would rather have I'd rather see the police burn than to see the American flag being hit against a policeman. Yes. Because the police officer knows their line of duty. If they're in a burning building, that's their fault. They're dumb as shit because that's the fire department's jurisdiction. But if they are...
I have something to say about that, Don.
But if you're if you're in your element and you are attacked...
Hey, I'm at work, so let me just say something quick. Don, in Minneapolis, a white guy burned down an empty police station, and now he has to pay $2 million restitution. But in another city, they try to lock the doors from the outside and burn the police station with police inside.
Yeah, and like I said, police are doing their job. Nobody died in that takeover, if you will. But
See them burn than hit with a flag, where they get to go home at the end of the day.
They don't go home,
yeah,
but
I mean,
they. But one guy
still attempted murder.
Didn't go home at the end of the day.
I know.
That's all. He got hit and he didn't go home at the end of the day. One of the most disgusting pictures I've ever seen in my life.
One of the problems with the Capitol insurrection is that the people who participated didn't take into account that there would be a backlash later. Like, they had their 45 minutes of fun in there, but moving statues around
minutes.
And then that other guy attacking a security guard and a police officer, like, there were a few people who died out of that.
Right, and I don't know what Suzette's talking about because, I mean, these people protesting for 135 days in a row, they're just saying, you know, kill the police. you got people walk around in the Capitol going, hang Mike Pence. That is that of their own party. That is beyond insurrection. That's a beyond sedition. That is just plain.
Wasn't there some chanting about killing police? And there was
that.
Also, like, I know the name Dave Dorn was murdered during some of these riots. So people were killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the thing is that they're both the horrible non-democratic, un-American things to do. But what
we
is,
can definitely agree.
What is America? We started this whole shit by kicking people's ass. We didn't come here with books and food and provisions. We came here with guns and chains and the attention. No, I'm talking about I'm saying ideologically, America was built on violence and murder. And then slavery. So bottom line is that what is so surprising about some of this shit? That's who we are. We're violent animals that have been controlled by one certain culture, and that is completely wrong. Not when the Constitution.
You're not looking at the history of other parts
equal.
Of the world at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
no,
exactly.
That's what everybody did. Look at the history of the Ottoman Empire
and the history in
Asia. Like, that's what.
Well, the Ottoman Empire was ruled by black people. But the bottom line is that the
and they were violent and nasty.
They were violent, and that's But we are supposed that, and I understand that. But we are supposed to be civilized. There's a word there that nobody is really using at all, especially when they're trying to change vernaculars. But the word civilized is supposed to be a part of our ideology. And when we are constantly looking at news, bombarded every second by violence, murder, war, greed, theft, pollution. When we are constantly bombarded with those issues, then just like we talked about, Jane talked about the young man from Chicago, you get indoctrinated, you get ingrained. In some cases, you get brainwashed into thinking that what you are actually looking at is the truth, and it can be the biggest falsehood in the world. You know how I feel. The biggest falsehood in the world is that Jesus Christ saw these pictures of that he's white, or that, you know, that's the farthest thing in the world.
You revert to that,
like it's going to push buttons.
I ride the elevator all day long, so I'm pushing buttons all day long. But you know, for the most part, if you read the doggone Bible.
Disagreeing with you. That's why I'm saying you're trying to push buttons that can't be pushed because I already have agreed with you.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna blame medieval Europeans for having no clue what Jesus looked like and depicting them as what they were familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's
written in the Bible. Wait, if there's text, is it says hair of will. Skin of hands of bronze, you know, that's just in the Bible. And so...
Well, I think they weren't seeing those.
And you travel overseas a lot. You see the edifices, the churches that have a Jesus that's painted there, who is the true depiction, black Jesus. But, of course, concept that Jesus is spiritual, he's everywhere, and I guess bullshit. But so that means the text of the Bible is a lie. You know, go for it. And that's one of my, that's what I was talking about. One of my biggest problems biggest lies.
Yeah, the Europeans also depicted him dressing the current clothing of the time, of their time,
right.
Not Jesus' time.
Not Jesus,
so they depicted
exactly.
him with what they saw around. You know, they read the scripture and they imagined things based on what was around them. And I'm not going to blame them for that. Like, you know, people go off of what's familiar.
I blame them for it because you're changing history. You're changing what was real. That's like having the Wizard of Oz in, you know, modern day suits. That's not how it works.
Well, they did recast it with black people, and that
right,
was the Wiz.
No,
so
and
if we're going to talk about cultural appropriation,
and it was very popular too. But
it was fun. I liked the movie, but then it's like, don't complain when there's like an anime that's done with white people or something, because Korea did the Three Musketeers with Korean guys,
right. And the play that got me that was stolen from me was a spoof on Scrooge, and it was with a black cast. So yeah, no, I've done that before myself.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying that there are falsehoods that we've been going under for centuries that really have affected what's going on now. So we have to address those falsehoods and really make sure that we teach the right classes. That's what the education, Department of Education
sure.
right
yeah.
now has been embroiled in multicultural curriculum, which I helped pass here in, I was very instrumental in passing here in Nevada. That we teach history of everyone, proper history of everyone, and not the watered down version like Christopher
and
Columbus.
The good and the bad.
Discovered
America. You know, yeah.
He didn't discover shit. Christopher Columbus and damn well, he was lost. He didn't discover Jack. People were already here. They're even saying that Leif Erikson was here. See, he discovered America thing, and that's why his statues are coming down, and they're renaming his the holiday, Indigenous Peoples Day. So, you know, that's one of the things that we are trying to change, because we're trying to make sure that, and it's for white people, because they don't know the history. White people are just so ignorant of what really is, because they weren't taught what the truth was in school. So it's kind of like everybody's got to start from page one and read the same book to determine how we really got here.
We're also going to learn that other places and other cultures were doing bad things too the whole time. Well, you mentioned we're supposed to be civilized. Well, I mean, I don't think any countries back then were very civilized compared to modern standards. We have a different way of looking at things than they did back then. All over the world, people fought conquest and slavery.
There were some countries in Asia and Africa that had peace for, I guess, a couple thousand years. So there have been quote unquote civilized societies. I can't say Pompeii. If you're out in the middle of nowhere and nobody's within 200 miles of you or 500 miles of you or 1,000 miles, of course you better be civilized.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, because you wouldn't have the interactions with society to know what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. So you can't necessarily say
yeah.
for sure that a person would be civilized.
Right. Well, I mean, most of the time, if you're in a bubble, if you're in a vacuum of civilization, the only time you're going to be uncivilized is if you have an insurrection of one or two very seldom are you going to have a civil war with 800 people that lasts for 200 years.
If you're a person living out in the middle of nowhere, thousands of miles away from people, and you never learned, you were born there in that house or whatever farm, you never learned how to eat with a spoon and fork. You can't just come in and out of being polite and using the social norms if you've never learned them. So you would be established by society standards.
Genghis Khan,
and also,
he conquered over 1,500 miles of land, and he was a one-man show.
But we're trying to figure out what peaceful civilizations that we've been able to,
what?
We can replicate. And there aren't too many.
I mean, yeah, that's true. I mean, people nowadays, I think, are a lot more peaceful than in the past. At least government, still not saying it's as good as it should be. And usually, yeah, I mean, it's usually the power structure. People in power that push the violence. You know, they say power corrupts. Also, you talked about the news and all the violence and stuff, and you know the news focuses on that, which is true too. I think we focus on that in history, and you know it's nice to look at the positive too. And nowadays, like there's things being invented. There's amazing things being done in science and health and medicine and technology,
mm-hmm.
But that doesn't make as much of the news as the violence and the bad stuff.
Sure. And as Don mentioned, you know, they sensationalize it on purpose. So, you know, mm-hmm. The populace being inundated with it daily, you know, on the hour, every hour, not every minute you turn on the news or radio, something's going on. And so, you know, they make it seem as though it's more than it really is, and even though it is small, it still exists because not every state, not every county, not every city is the same. You may have cities with more violence than others, and so those that don't experience it aren't aware of it, and those that live it every day, that's all that they know, and so they believe that that's where it exists everywhere, and as Don mentioned a moment ago. But you know, in all reality, when we look at the statistics, violence has actually gone down. Violence and crime have gone down since 1992.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All this stuff.
Yeah.
All this stuff is not reflective. In reality, these organizations, these negative clubs or whatever the case, they're there to perpetuate their a side that even if they're losing, they need to be in the system in order to have that kind of ideological balance. They, you know, if you're a Democrat, you've got to take your lumps when you lose. If you're a Republican, until recently, you've got to take your lumps when you lose, but you're not going to stop doing what you're doing over time. Because it's a job.
You guys have to go now, but you guys can talk 15 more minutes. But because I transfer these good shows to YouTube, can you get out of the noise area, please? The baby zone. Hello? Don.
Baby zone,
Don. Can you get out of the baby zone so when I transfer it to YouTube, then people can really hear what we're saying.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, have a good night, y'all, and you can talk as long as you want. I think there's like 30 minutes of airtime left. But I'll see you next time. But go ahead and keep talking.
All right.
Good night.
Thanks. We'll see you around, Jane.
Night, Jane.
Yep, bye-bye.
You bet.
But, yeah, that's the thing I worry about is the news. Well, that can kind of cause violence if people are like, oh, look at everybody's out to get you and look at this bad stuff. And then, yeah, people get more hostile from hearing that. So that's kind of my concern. But, yeah, it helps to think to look at the good in the world.
Hostile from what? I'm not, I lost you.
Hearing that all the talk about look at how the whole all this bad stuff and these everybody's out to get you, and you know, when people hear that, yeah, then it makes them more defensive.
See, I have never ever said that I'm out to get you. I have never been retaliatory.
No, I never said you did.
No. I'm just saying in general. I'm just saying a people, I don't understand people because I don't understand fear. I don't understand a lot of emotion. I don't because I'm more Spock-like where logic is supposed to more or less control your life, if that's what you want to call it. So I don't experience the same emotions. And so I don't understand why people have to take retribution, have envy, jealousy. Those are things I don't understand. And so when you say, you know, those things, I'm not comprehending.
Yeah, it's it seems like a lot of news is pushing trying to push people to either feel guilty or resentful. And there's a lot of talk along those lines about like we need to tax the rich. And you know, if you calculate the numbers, you could take everything from the rich thing and then redistribute it to everybody, and it's not going to do a whole lot.
And that's true. What they're saying is that it's going to have to be almost all the distribution of the assets in order to satisfy getting everyone on a relatively even plane. But that's the more or less concept or justification of communism, and where everybody if you're rich, you're going to be more or less trying to take care of the plebiscite.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, a libertarian view is let's bring everybody up. Instead of trying to make everybody equal, we should focus on bringing everybody up, right? If you're on a ship and some people are in the ocean drowning and some people are on the ship, then you don't want everybody drowning. You want the people to bring the people on the ship, right? You want to bring lift people up. So,
right.
So I don't say, like, people talk about equality. It's like, well, why is that the goal? The goal should be to bring everybody up, and especially bring up the people that are the worst off, but not just make everybody the same. Because everybody could be equally miserable, and you haven't improved anything.
You must have been reading my mind there, Wade, because I was just going to talk about that. My dream would be if we could return to or even just create a society where we were more concerned with the value of a person rather than what the person has. And, you know, for me, managing, I want the people below me, when they look good, I look good. So I'm going to do everything in my power to educate them, to make them happy, you know, as far as listening to them, whatever they need, so that they'll perform. And then when I move up, they move up. And so we're moving up together. You know, we're not equal because I'm the manager, but eventually their next move is going to be manager, and they're going to bring up the people that are below them. And so if we could do that and be concerned about raising somebody's potential or helping them reach their potential, a better society all the way around.
Yeah. I don't, you know, it upsets me when people talk about, like, oh, well, the only solution is just to super tax the rich. And it's not because I'm protective of the rich. It's like the rich will be fine. They don't need me protecting them. They don't need me defending them. I'm not getting upset on their behalf. It's the degrading of us. It's the disbelief in the rest of the world. It's the lack of faith that we have any kind of like that's all we're capable of is just taking from rich people. We're not able to innovate. We're not able to be resourceful and creative. And it just seems to just dismiss. I always loved the idea of being an innovator and trying to be creative and resourceful. And it just throws that out the window. It's like, no, none of that. No ideas, no creativity matters. We just have to fleece the rich. And it's what a sad way to look at the world.
Well, also, Wade, you also have to consider, too, that when it seems like government is punishing the rich because they need to pay their fair share or other regulations or this or that, that bogs down their company from further innovating any more products, they also stifle it for the little guy who's invented something and wants, you know, to produce it to the world because it can benefit the world. But to get a patent, it is so freaking expensive. I've got three inventions that I've put together already. But to patent it, good Lord, the amount of money and red tape to patent that, and they do that in order to slow down these corporations. But, hey, what about us little guys? Everything you put on them.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you stifle us too, you know.
Well, they say – they make it like – well, a lot of people make it a class thing. Like, if I'm in favor of free market, it's because I like the rich people to stay in power and the poor people to stay poor. But really my motivation is just about the opposite. It's like, you know, I realize that a lot of these government programs, a ton of the money is actually going to these bureaucrats. You know, all these people get their cut before the money gets to the poor. And I'm tired of those guys. I'm tired of the leechy rich getting the money and not, you know, I mean, we're talking about the not stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. It's stealing from the middle class and productive rich to give to rich people that aren't really contributing, the bureaucrats and such. And it's this, and to me, that's maintaining the status quo instead of cutting down the barriers, cutting down the red tape, and letting the little guy, you know, just stop believing them and let them give them a chance. Stop hindering them.
I agree.
Yeah, cool.
Don?
The little guy always bears the brunt of everything. So what's happening is that we're talking about tax cuts, a change in deductions. All those things are going to affect the little guy in the end. It's where the corporations have kept wages / benefits, don't offer any retirements,
Don, before, a while back, before they came up with all these policies, rules, regulations, and fees, the little guy could create an invention, a product, or add to, or, you know, change, alter, whatever, come up with their own thing that people would buy. And so that little guy ended up turning into a corporation. He had at least an open door to be able to make that possible, to improve the world with his one little product, his or her little product, you know, even if it was for a minute. But nevertheless, he had that opportunity. And now we don't have that anymore because we're so focused on punishing the rich. That's when the little guy gets squashed too.
But that's not necessarily it, Suzette. What his history told you about the Vanderbilts, Rockefellers, and all of them, what you do is you crush the little guy. The little guy is not your friend. Business is competition. Business is about destroying your competition. And so if you've got the little guy and he has made a magnificent invention and he's getting acclaimed, the patent is still good for another 15 years, that big corporation is going to come in with an extra $2 million and add it on another $5 million offer. And the next thing you know, the stock is going to go through the roof. causing all the other stocks to go through the roof, causing some kind of bubble, and everybody's paying when we have a crash or a correction.
Well, these corporations weren't always there. They had to be a little guy at some point in time. And
right,
so
but they get eaten up. They get eaten up, too.
Not everybody makes it. That just means your product wasn't good enough back then. But nowadays, yes, we have too many monopolies. We have corporations that are out of control. But it wasn't always like that. You had said earlier that the little guy always doesn't do good type thing. It's like, no, they did good, because if they didn't, we wouldn't have, you know, created as many products and had factories and innovations left and right, booming the industrial age and so on and so forth, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, you know, the best example is that Porsche made an electric car in 1902. I don't know if Packard or somebody bought it and threw them in the garbage can. And so now we're in
I think I know what you're referring to.
If you don't want to call it climate change, you can call it whatever you want, but we're snorting twice the pollutants, CO2 and everything else that the car has, the combustive engine has emitted or causes a finished product. And, the United States has, in the last 10 years or 20 years, has gone up a degree. The axis of the Earth has changed, I think, close to the 3 degrees that they were talking about back in the 2000s. And so now here we are where we're getting rain in the, the middle of the Arctic, snow in the middle of Texas.
Yeah. I think one thing that's often missed is that, because people, you know, people like to give the emotionally exciting, satisfying arguments, and people love the rhetoric because it's just more empowering, right? But the reality is that reality is very complicated, right? So a lot of these things exist simultaneously, right? There have been studies. So there is a movement in wealth, right? Not the same, you know, it's not the people that are wealthy now aren't necessarily all from the ancestors that were wealthy in ancient Rome or what have you, right? That money, there are a lot of times where the children of millionaires will squander the money and be foolish and lose it. But there are, you know, there are companies and there are corporations that do really bad things. That doesn't mean all of them. So I think one of the things, I talk to a lot of people that are socialist minded, and they tend to generalize too much, that they want to be mad at corporations, so it's all the corporations. It's like, well, let's be more discerning. There are people doing really bad things that are rich, and you know, there are people that aren't so much doing the bad things, and there's a lot of different things. So I'd want to, before I accuse someone of something, I always try to look at the details and, okay, what was their story? What happened here? If that makes sense. Any thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Suzette.
We also need to remember as well that because these corporations make so much money, they can only hide so much money. Let's face it, that's the truth. A lot of them hide a lot of money. But in order to receive a lot of the tax breaks that they get, they have to give to charity. You know, so
yeah.
We have a lot of different charities out there that are not supported by the government, and they shouldn't be. They're privately funded. And to make services available, St. Jude, for instance. And then there's this Cancer Institute. And, you know, there's all these. And so if you start, you know, digging in the pockets and those charities go away, and that hurts society as well, because people who can't afford medical services for their children or for themselves if they have cancer, they just get tossed to the wayside and don't get to enjoy a fuller life. So there are good things and bad things to corporations. There is a wealth gap right now, and that's because I truly believe that it was the policies that our central government, you know, had put on these companies, and also and the way they had fed the stock market so that they could stay on top. And, you know, it's just a big mess, and it's all at the top. But somebody eventually had to work to get to that point of a corporation. And so there, the wealth gap was not supposed to be like it is now. Right now we don't have a free market capital system. We have a crony capital system, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
And that's right. We don't have the free market system like it was supposed to be. And the main reason is because we lost our gold standard, and it pretty much changed the dynamics of fiscal and monetary policy. Right now we're just going by the seat of our pants. The most beautiful contestant wins, and we're the most beautiful contestant in an ugly country's contest. So we're trying our best. We're losing ground in everything from the economy to education to tech. You know, it's just an uphill battle all the time.
Yeah, that's why I believe it's like give power locally, so that you let lots of people give them the opportunity to make good choices. Because, yeah, it doesn't mean, like, the idea with free market isn't because lots of people are going to make good choices. It's that you give the opportunity for those that do have good ideas to come through. I think someone, what was it, on our show at one point, somebody made the comment of, like, putting down free market. They said, oh, look at how many businesses fail and stuff. It's like, well, that's part of the idea. Free market doesn't mean everybody's got a great idea. Free market means you give the freedom so that those that do have a good idea can flourish. And
you said
don't
the right
have
word
to be
when
in
you
a
said
position
opportunity.
Of power.
You used
yeah.
the right word when you said opportunity, give, yes. But,
opportunity,
go ahead.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, so that's, I think that's key.
But you also used the word... You also use the word market, and one of the biggest things with the 5-year rule where, 90% of all businesses fail, 95% in 5 years, the thing is that they don't have the right plan. And marketing, which I did for a long time, a lot of businesses leave that out of the equation, and they fail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's lots of reasons they fail.
So it's not the free market principle, but it's the fact that the businesses themselves don't apply to the free market principles.
Yeah, well, that's
right. They're missing
both,
something.
You have to have a good idea, and you have to present it well, right? So either one, you can fail at either one. And I thought of another point too. It's like people look at how many businesses fail. It's like, well, how much of that? How much better could that ratio be if government wasn't making it so hard for small businesses?
Absolutely. And those failures often lead to successes later. You know, the people find out what it was that they did wrong, and then they pursue another adventure or another venture capital, invest again and figure out correct their mistakes, and they may make it and they may miss something else and try it again. But eventually, if they persist, they become successful.
But you were
that opportunity has to be there. Sorry.
But you're missing a crucial point in some of what you're saying too, is that I forgot what I was going to say. What was that last thing you said to that?
Oh, I was talking about the failures of startup companies. You know, they may have made a critical error in their finances, or maybe the product that they chose, it happened to be a niche and they didn't think about it, so, you know, it didn't work out, so they fail, and then they figure out the mistake and they try again with something else.
Yeah, I forget what I was just,
part of the
I forgot
part.
What I was going to say.
Yeah, failure is part of learning, you know, that people don't understand. Well, sometimes people will look down on a business person that's like someone that's really rich and be like, oh, but look how many failures they had. It's like, well, yeah, but that's what got them to where they were. You know, the easiest way to not fail is to not try. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, the,
and what irritates me when people are all about government contracts, it's like, well, sometimes then it's like those people get protected. The politician likes them, and they keep overpaying this person. Someone else would do it, would love to take the opportunity to do it for cheaper. They don't get a chance. The money's going toward this guy that the politician chose, and they're not doing it as well because they've got a good cushy deal.
Mm-hmm. And then taxpayer ends up paying for it in the end.
Yep. Well, that's why and that's why the vote is so important, because you have to vote in the right people or else they will steal you blind. I know here in Nevada, the Department of Transportation and Department of Education are some of the biggest sieves in the country. More money goes out of there without anybody knowing where it goes than almost any place. But here in Nevada, you know, we've got corporations, we're one of the two corporation states, so we have dark money more than you know. And somebody, I think they mentioned that corporations, the problem is that the regulations are there for a reason, and the corporations don't follow the regulations. And that's why we have so many lawyers. The legal system is blooming because all these business people are bad actors.
They actually go around the regulations, and that's where the problem lies, is because that's why they go to court, because they're saying they're not following the regulations. Yes, we are. No, because you're still doing this. It's like, well, yeah, we can do that because of this and this and this loophole mm-hmm. over here that allows us to do it that way.
Yeah.
There was a company that died today or yesterday that got indicted, and they, dang, was it Facebook or somebody where they said they have, I had a memo in the past memo that had said we're going to continue doing our you know, criminal activity because it's cheaper than the lawsuit is cheaper than what we would be making if we, you know, continue.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to get a lot worse if carbon tax is implemented, because they are able to buy carbon credits, which says, okay, so everybody's only, manufacturers are only allowed so much to emit so much carbon, but if you need to emit more, then you can buy a carbon credit, which just means you're going to pay mm-hmm. extra to be able to emit more. So corporations that are making bucks, that, you know, it's nothing for them to pay that extra for the carbon credit. So really, they're really not reducing anything.
No, exactly.
Somebody's
exactly.
just going to make out, you know, as far as the money collected. That's all.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think? What do you guys think about corporations being people too? I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard.
Yeah, I don't think they're people. I don't know where I don't know where that came from, but yeah, I don't
citizens,
think they are
well,
people.
Citizens United was able to pass that.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's a lot of things that corporations are allowed to get away with. You know, my like my father had his pension taken from him because the company was U.S. Air at the time. Since then, they've been taken over and the leadership's out and there's new people in. But U.S. Air at the time, they declared bankruptcy, I guess, and then they said, oh, we can't pay our pensions anymore. And then the CEOs went on a cruise together, I guess, to talk about their woes or something. You know, it's like,
wow.
Okay, you have, there's enough money for you to go on a cruise, so... You know, yeah, they get to do stuff like that, and it's a shame.
And they do it all the time.
Mm-hmm. And our government is stupid with these bailouts because they don't hold them accountable. They're like, okay, so we need to bail you out. How much do you need? Okay, here you go. Instead of how much do you need? Show us where the money goes or where it's going to go exactly, and we want receipts on everything, and we're going to charge you interest because we need to account for that money because it belongs to my constituents. But no, they're just like, here you go, here's a check. Pay us when you got it.
You know what makes me what makes me angry about the bailouts, too, is that I mean, what a great opportunity. These companies failing could have been a great opportunity for new people to fill the vacuum, and that was taken away from them. You know, that there could have been a great opportunity. Well, you know, Hollywood's doing really bad right now, and I'm kind of cheering it on. I'm like, great, I want new people to be able to get in and be able to tell stories. And you know, with these bailouts, like, okay, nope, keep the same guys in power. Yeah, I mean, big companies falling, that's how new people get to rise up.
Yep, everything must come to an end. And so if they screwed up, well, then that's great because the next guy that was waiting for something to happen, he was wishing upon a star and praying on his knees every night, and finally the big banks bailed, and he was cheering, and then he heard bailout. Ah, everything just went gone.
Yeah.
Gotta be kidding me.
I mean, well, I know in the short run it hurts the workers, unfortunately.
Well, that's what happens.
It hurts, the chain reaction.
That's what happened in 2008 with the TARPs. At least those corporations were accountable. And they're not accountable this time, and I'm worried about where that money is going.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was the shovel-ready jobs didn't pan out very well, but we don't know where that money went. You know, it was a bust after a month. It's like, okay, well, there was a lot of money towards that. Well, where'd that go? We still have a big debt.
Yeah, that's the problem. And where's the accountability of, like, okay, well, what were you doing to get us in this situation in the first place? You get to pretend you did nothing wrong because it was solved for you.
Well, like I said, the economy is really screwed up, and now we don't have a LIBOR. So the banks are paying whatever more or less they want in buying money. So they've got buying money at who knows what cost. Bonds that they're selling to pay for PPP, and then everything else that we're going through with more money than we know what to do with. Our problem is that we are liquid beyond belief. The rich people are richer than beyond belief right now. And nobody is saying a word. That's the problem.
But that belongs to them, though.
It doesn't belong to them. They're getting the same welfare that you're getting, that I'm getting. They're getting the same welfare. The same percentages of PPP as everybody else, but that, you know, for a corporation that's making billions of dollars a day, that's just, a drop in the bucket. But they're getting their money, and it's all welfare money, and that's what I'm talking about, is that this financial system is all artificial right now. And
that does bother me.
Yeah, the PPE did go to small businesses, but small special interest businesses, not the corporations themselves, but the special interest small businesses that were, you know, friends with people in Congress. And, you know, we can thank the power of the purse that's been going on for decades, using taxpayer money like it's an open, endless checkbook so that we can fund research for stupid things in other countries when we need that money here for people who are hurting here. You know, when we're funding research to find out, you know, if crickets can swim, you know, in you know, some other country, in Germany or, you know, some third world country, what for?
So we can send them to Mars and eat. So we
funding abortions in other countries, you know, that's not
well,
for
that's
us
the
to
thing
do.
Too,
I mean,
swimming crickets can change the history of the world. swimming crickets
yeah,
can change
well,
the history of the world.
Well, yeah, that's the thing too. I think we're really hitting on the topic tonight of like, you know, there's this point like when you say when you talk about the government and they're too big and stuff and people get the idea that a lot of libertarians hate the poor, like you know, it doesn't upset me so much that the government is giving money toward people that are on hard times and they really need it, and you know that's not what I have issue with. It's like yeah, it's these snobby artists that don't need it, or the rich, yeah, are doing stupid things in other countries, or some person has this stupid study that we don't even need. There's just so much waste, you know. It's like we can cut so much spending without hurting the people that really need it. But I do get upset too about some welfare recipients, the ones that are taking advantage and just being ungrateful and stuff.
Well, you know, Wade, you could actually say
too.
That most, if not all, welfare recipients are, you know, basically they don't need it, but they do. And let me explain myself. The way the system is set up, unfortunately, people who actually did, you know, would rather, you know, eat their right arm than go to the welfare system, you know, because they've been, you know, financially independent and, you know,
yeah.
had a job, and then suddenly their world was upside down and they have kids and a family to take care of, so they have to bite that bullet and do that. But the thing is, they get stuck in it because the welfare system is set for people to get stuck in it. It's a trap because they, if you go over 20 hours, then they take that, they take part of that money away. And so you can't ever get ahead in order to get out. And that's a bad system. You know, whoever set that system up, they knew what they were doing because they knew that they were going to trap these people. And the only way that they would be able to get out is if they had some other assistance, alternative assistance from the outside, like family or something, that that could go underreported in order for them to be able to get out. And, I mean, that's a sick system right there. You're going to punish somebody for trying to actually get on their own two feet, you know. So, you know, people do need a hand every now and then. But those people that need that safety net for a minute, they've got to have a way to get out. And it's not set up that way right now. And so, you know, it just increases that amount of money that welfare recipients just keep increasing because people will continue to lose their jobs and things will happen in their lives. But we're not letting anybody out at the same time. You know, there's supposed to be people that will be able to get out so we can bring you in.
And in a freer system, you know, these people maybe would be doing some wood carvings and selling them, or, you know, I mean, I think of like the old rough way, or like just grow some vegetables and sell them to people. And how much of that is just, how much of that is just not very practical because of roadblocks, right? I mean, if the government, again, wasn't making it so difficult for people to try new things, wasn't cutting down their options so much, maybe
a job part-time, you know, to meet the the minimum, so they're not going to take welfare money away so their kids can actually have lunch this week. They actually were proposed with an opportunity. Manager said, doing a great job. You know, I want to make you full-time. What do you think? Can you start next week? And now that person has a decision to make because, yes, that's an opportunity of a lifetime, but she needs that paycheck this week because there's, you know, they're going to lose the roof over their head if they don't. Rent is due. So, and it's going to be about a week or two before she gets that new paycheck. So do I do it and we're homeless for a week, or I might not even be able to find another place to live, you know, or do I not take that job and stay where I'm at and get my check and, you know, I'll have a roof over my head. It's like, you know, it's so bad.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, I lived in L.A. for a while, so that can be pretty tough.
Well, this is the biggest decision. This is one of the biggest decisions I've ever made. I've continued with the PPE and the chairs and all that stuff. And so I can see where people become unmotivated after they've stayed at home for, what, now almost a year, at least 9 months. And they don't want, you know, there is no impetus to work. And that's, surprising. You know, it's one of the few things I never would have thought I saw in my life where they're paying you not to work, but it's happening, and it really is bothersome to me. And I'm getting paid because usually I'm working at this time of year. So it's kind of strange.
I bet. Yeah. There were warnings about that, though, and people were saying, no, that's not going to happen. That's what you want to happen. No, that's just human nature. Oh, okay, you just don't want people to get ahead. No.
And who's going to say no to the help? And at the same time, it's like, and sometimes you even know, you know, it's like, I mean, I've been blessed with very supportive parents, and sometimes I've had to tell them, look, let me struggle with this, because at the same time, how do you refuse free money, free help? And even when you know, okay, but this is weakening me, you know, I need to face this struggle. I need to face this beast and become stronger.
And it's not free money. During this whole COVID thing, I keep hearing, we need to look out for each other. You don't want to spread it and get somebody else sick so they'll die. Sorry, I'm eating something. Let me take it out of my mouth. It's rude. But
No, you're right. It's not free money.
Yeah, so let's not look out for each other and think about the money that's going to have to be paid in taxes for that free money, quote unquote, that you just received.
Exactly.
You know? You're going to go buy that TV that you've always wanted, but now you have that little extra cushion. So now you're eyeing it as far as, well, what the heck? Who knows when we'll have free money again? Like, not free. Not free.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. And people don't think about that.
Well,
oh, and not only that, but the people that get their money, the stimulus check that they got, they're going to be taxed on that. What is that about? They already pay taxes on it when they worked for it. Now they're out of work, and they're giving their money back, and they're going to tax you again on it. Good grief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, no, I don't know how that's going to work. With the tax on the on stimulus check, because people are getting pretty good. They got pretty good stimulus checks.
Yep, and nobody told them about that tax thing, unless you read the site.
They just sent a check.
Yeah, well, the thing, too, is that if you do the calculations, I don't remember the exact numbers. Okay, look at how much the whole stimulus package was that the government paid. Divide that by, like, 300 million. We agree there's about 300 million people in the U.S., right? There's a lot of money not going toward people. So most of that money, I mean, you know, you look at how much money they spent per person, it's a lot more than what people, like more than twice what people got.
Oh, yeah. When they make these bills like $2.3 trillion, $1.6 trillion, and everybody's only getting a $1,400 paycheck or a stimulus check, not even the entire population. It's like, where the hell did that money go?
Yeah.
Administrative fees. That stuff goes to
The
workers and the accountants and the people who have to put together the figures, the programmers, all those people get a portion of that money.
Oh, don't forget the museums. We got to give money to the museums that are, you know, privately funded, but we're giving money to museums even though they're closed because of the COVID.
I know I'd irritate a lot of people because I've been involved in arts and film and I love the arts, and I know a lot of friends don't like hearing this, but it's like that irritates me, because what it is, when you start funding like these special museums and stuff, what you're saying is I know better. Me, the politician, knows better what is good art. you know, art is about personal taste. But they're saying, no, you don't know better. We need to take your money and put it towards what we know is better art, because you don't know what's good. You would use the money to watch some dumb movie that you like. We know this is good art. And it's like, that's elitist. You know, that's, I think.
They're picking and choosing losers with our money. We don't have a say-so
yes.
in it.
And it's usually stuff like this modernist stuff that most people don't like, you know. People would probably want their money to go toward, like, Marvel films or something, or video games, and, you know, and who's to say that's not that's not good art? I mean, if that's, who's to say what I like is more important than what you like? But a lot of people do say that. I've been around those people a lot.
And I would never spend a dime on a video game or a Marvel movie.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I mean, not that those are the best things, but I'm just saying, you know, there's people want other things. They don't want necessarily what the government pushes. Well, I was thinking like art too. I mean, look how many amazing art movies. People always say, I've heard a lot of people talk about, oh, why is modern art crap? It's not. It's just that you're just looking at the stuff the government funds as modern art. But modern
mm-hmm.
art, you've got like steampunk stuff and manga stuff, and then just there's all these fantastic, like, beautiful, rich, detailed, naturalistic, fantastical, colorful stuff that's out there. But that's not what you see in these museums that are getting funded.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. The stimulus package that was 5,593 pages long, out of the money that was allocated for that, there was a new Smithsonian. They had two new museums that were authorized with that stimulus money to be built. They aren't even built yet. And we're worried about building museums right now during this pandemic. Please. Also, what was funded was the support for the Dalai Lama.
what?
Let's see. Yes, let me be more specific. In a shot across the bow at China, the bill reaffirms the right of the Tibetan people to reincarcerate the Dalai Lama. China regards the exiled spiritual leader who continues to advocate for a degree of Tibetan self-rule as a threat to its sovereignty. The text of the legislation warns interference by the government of the People's Republic of China or any other government in the process of recognizing a successor or reincarnation of the 14th Dalai Lama, and any future Dalai Lamas would represent a clear abuse of the right to religious freedom of the Tibetan Buddhists and the Tibetan people. So the legislature directs the Secretary of State to establish a U.S. consulate in Tibet's main city of Lhasa. So, yes, Dalai Lama receives a chunk of our money there. The right to reproduce Smokey the Bear. The bill repeals a provision of federal law criminalization, unauthorized use of Smokey Bear and Woody the Owl, famous mascot. So there was a good chunk of money that went to that.
all these pork bills are part of the people in power's theft of money. You know, the redistribution of wealth. And this is all
mm-hmm.
a part of it. They're going to get all wealthy, but the thing is that this whole economy is going to fall. It's going to drop because everything is so overvalued. Everything is based on value, everything. And when you can't determine value and you go too far one way or the other, all the other economists and the Treasury and things don't know what's going on. So you get into a situation where everything is crazy, and you can't get a finger, put your thumb on anything and especially anything traditional. So we're going out of our way, and that's why we need to have term limits or Supreme Court justices, Congress people, and all kinds of things that you just proposed. You mentioned today, Suzette. So that's what we need to figure out.
There's a watchdog group that looked over this last February stimulus bill that had passed, $1.9 trillion, and going through where the money had gone or was allocated to, the watchdog group has identified more than $310 billion in spending that has little to do with the pandemic and another $500 billion that could be cut without fundamentally changing the package, which means, they went to little projects that they had up there at the Capitol. So far, so much for the American Rescue Plan, huh? Let's rescue everybody and everything except for the American people. But we're going to call it the American Rescue Plan.
Yeah. Let's give money to already rich people and make them richer.
Hey, y'all, it's nothing new.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting how many conversations I've had with people where they're like, well, this is a good thing, so it should be funded. And I'm like, why are you ignoring the whole issue of the misuse of funds? It's like, you're going to keep giving this funding. You think if we fund it, it's going to be better. It's like, no, you got to address the people misusing the funds.
Well,
they're getting plenty of funds. They're pocketing it.
You've heard me say, Wade, that I believe that we need to cut waste out of our current funding and not spend more on funding. So this is, I agree with you there.
Yeah,
apparently
good.
Out of the $4 trillion stimulus, there's still a whole lot of it that hasn't been spent. It's still just sitting there, but yet they passed another one in January. Yeah.
Well, the one that they passed was only for $2.1 trillion. That $1.9 trillion. But wait a minute. No, that was the $2.4 trillion. And then they used $1.9 trillion.
The $4 trillion is the one that Trump signed, and the $1.9 is under Biden.
Right. So that's your $4 trillion. And yes, all that money hasn't been spent because all the people that it was earmarked for are either they haven't been found, or they, lost their businesses or moved or whatever. Various reasons. Didn't file their taxes on time. There are various reasons they didn't get their monies, and that money is still sitting there. So, yes, there's still much that money in.
I just think they over-asked. We need this much money.
Yes, they did over-ask, but they only over-asked because they couldn't fulfill who they were looking for. It wasn't because they just over-asked and they got an abundance of overage. It was because their inept record-keeping didn't allow them to get everybody that they earmarked their funds for.
She did cite examples of misuse too. I mean, there's a lot of things like you didn't need money for that. Come on.
$5,000 was earmarked to purchase Santa gifts for seniors at Beech Grove. $250,000 to expand the offerings at the Michelle Obama Library, including workshop events and other programs.
Michelle got her herpes.
Yes, she did. $300,000 for a new dog park in Montebello. $500,000 for Trenton artwork project, lighting and murals along a pedestrian and bike path. Really? $1.2 million for the I can't even pronounce the Kanaga trolley. Some trolley. $3.5 million to build fish markets in St. Thomas, the Virgin Islands. $7.7 million for the Tampa Street Car project, and $18.6 million to rebuild the fire station in Kodiak, Alaska. Those sound like pandemic to me.
Well, I don't know what they're doing in Kodiak, Alaska, but they might need that $13 million. You know, they're pretty poor up there.
Oh, 18.6, yeah.
18.6, okay.
But it's a fire station, so I get what you're saying. That seems like it's something practical, you know, not Santa gifts for seniors. I mean, I think they'll get over it if they don't get a gift from their representative. Why doesn't she make some?
I was just kidding. Not 13. That's $13 million. That fire station would be like Disneyland. $13 million. Shoot.
There's this website you can check out. It's called OpenTheBooks.com, and they show everything as far as the members. There were 324 members of Congress that had earmarks, Republicans and Democrats. And the most expensive earmark came from Representative Garrett Graves, Louisiana Republican, earmark count 11. And his was over $1 trillion of earmarks.
Wow, Garrett Graves.
What is that? Can you... Okay, can you explain that to me a little better? So what is the earmark? What does that mean, earmark?
Earmark is when they had submitted the bill, they said, I need X amount of money for my projects over here, for this, set aside out of that $1 trillion. So if the Congress said we're going to have a $2 trillion stimulus bill, then they had to work out how this person is going to get their amount of money that they set aside for them.
Yeah, that's pretty repulsive.
Okay.
I mean, how many people not in Congress have pet projects that they would have loved to have gotten back their kept their tax money, not paid taxes? Oh, now I can fund my dream, but they're not politicians. So, yeah. Yep, that's pretty horrid.
It is. It's disgusting. This organization really goes down to the roots. They don't care who you are. They
that's,
rank
that's
them.
That's the bottom line. They don't care. As long as you get your money, you don't care who you hurt or who you are.
Yeah, well, the organization that had basically did the audit for the stimulus money, that's what I meant as far as they don't care who they are, Democrat, Republican, Independent.
Oh,
they're going to out you. And they did. Right off the bat, man, Republican.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Yeah.
I got to take my daughter to her friend's house. So, anything else? Any conclusions?
No, great discussion. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I enjoyed myself very much.
Yeah,
and thank you, Jane.
I'm glad it was only like three people. We really got to get a lot of points across, so it's good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And,
it was a healthy discussion. Go ahead,
right.
Don. What?
All right, guys.
Good night, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
All right.
Everybody.
See you guys.
Good.
Take care.
All right, Wade.
Bye.
All right, Suzette. Bye-bye.